fire insurance, insurance coverage, how to file a claim from wildfire damage. Those are a few of the many questions and the issues being dealt with intensely since last month's wildfires in California. On Insight, Nancy Kincaid from the State Insurance Commissioner's Office is here today to talk about what's happening and what's available at the state level. Then, could more Christmas tree permits help thin California's forests? That's a question Cap Radio's environment reporter has looked at, and he'll tell us what he learned. Sacramento singer-songwriter Jessica Malone has a concert this weekend. We'll recap my conversation with her. If you haven't heard her music, be sure to take a listen. And later, Dennis Newhall with a KZAP sound advice and a great list of new boxed music sets just in time for holiday gift giving. I'm Beth Ruiak. That's today on Insight. First, the news. From Capital Public Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm Beth Ruiak. The list of 11 names is a top priority for the Butte County Sheriff's Office. These are the names of the last people who have not been accounted for since the campfire. You probably remember that that list at one point was well over 1,000. It's now at 11. We have posted the names on our website. I feel that we should read the names in case there's a connection that you can make. So here is the list as it stands as of last night. Harriet Baker, Darla Banks, John Casilla, Florence Cody, John Demianu, Sarah Fabia Martinez, Wendy Krug, Devin Rule, No Sabayasa, also known as Alejandro Sabalsa, John Sparks, and Noel Tafoya. So there's more information at the Butte County Sheriff's Office, and there are three different numbers to call. They are on our website. I'll give you one right now, 530, and all the numbers are 530-538. All the numbers are also 538-6570, 530-538-6570. 85 people are confirmed dead from the campfire, which started November 8th. It destroyed almost 19,000 structures, and as you've heard in our news this morning, nearly 14,000 of those were houses. In the studio with me now is Nancy Kincaid. She is press secretary for Insurance Commissioner Dave Jones. And the California Insurance Office is navigating claims and assistance for policyholders. Nancy, there is no easy way into this story.
There isn't. The tragedy is really the loss of life. And knowing first that so many people lost their lives, this is the deadliest fire in state history. And it seems as though each fire eclipses the previous one, that we then say, this is the worst fire. And now we see 50,000 people left homeless, and as you noted, 14,000 homes. That's an enormous loss of property, and trying to recover from that is difficult for people.
In that loss, what is the department's sense of how many people were or were not insured?
We don't really know that yet. People are just getting access to their properties to find out if theirs is gone, if it is damaged, or if it is completely destroyed. Our detectives in our law enforcement branch are working with the sheriff, and we're escorting insurance companies back we started this last Thursday, escorting property owners and insurers to the property so that they could document the losses. So in the next couple of weeks, we'll have a much better sense of how many, how much, and what the dollar total of those losses are.
It seems that a place to start is figuring out what's in a policy if you have an insurance policy. So can we begin with the fact that there's an online property insurance locator form?
There is. If you fled your property and you do not have your policy, the first thing to do is go to your insurance company and let them know that you have a policy and they can find it. If you are a survivor of a family member and you're trying to piece together their life and what their coverage was, we actually have an online policyholder locator that you can enter search information and we can help you find that policy. It's a form that you submit, and then the department will assist you in locating with all of the different insurers who has that policy and what the provisions of that policy are so that you can begin that claim process.
I want to put that concept of a policy in existence on hold for a minute and back up. We're hearing about FEMA's emergency resources. We have a state insurance department. How do people navigate each? And are the two entities for you completely separate?
They are in many ways. We all come together at the Disaster Recovery Center and work together to help consumers, make sure that we're getting people to navigate to the resource that they need. It starts with, do you have insurance? And if you do, the insurance companies come onto a property. They usually call it an insurance village. They bring catastrophe vehicles. They have computers. They are all set up to immediately cut you a check and get you to where you can get a hotel, a rental property, a car, whatever you need to start that process, because it really is traumatic. And people just, what you hear repeatedly, and my daughter went through a devastating house fire. And all I heard from her for weeks was, I just want to feel normal again, Mom. When's it going to be normal? And that's the hard part, is the loss of your things, your memories, and the devastation because you've lost control. And a system is kind of controlling you. So we help you navigate that system. If you don't have insurance, you do go to FEMA and SBA and see what resources are available to help you if you have no insurance. If you have insurance, start with your company, reach out to the California Department of Insurance, and the commissioner has completely mobilized our team, and they are at the Disaster Recovery Center in Butte and in Southern California to help consumers.
There is a hotline phone number. I'll give it more than once in this conversation, but this is for the State Department, and it is 800-927-4357, which we've figured out, if you have letters on your phone, is 800-ZAP-HELP. ZAPHELP. And we'll mention that again. So in this circumstance of finding out whether you have insurance or not, let's say you've located the policy. Now you have to navigate with the insurance company. There are still cautions, and your department is still providing a lot of oversight in what happens next.
We do. We regulate the carriers here in California, and they are required to follow all of those laws and regulations that govern how a policy is carried out for a consumer, how a claim is handled. It has to be handled in a specific way within a specific time period. The department is there to assist people should they run into any difficulty or conflict with the insurance company. I'll give you an example. In the North Bay fires that occurred in 2017, our consumer services team, that toll-free number you mentioned, have helped a number of consumers to the point that an additional $52 million was recovered for those homeowners who needed help settling their claim. That's money they probably would not have seen had the department not intervened and helped them with their claim.
Which isn't necessarily illegal operations by the insurance
Correct.
Companies.
Sometimes it's just a disagreement over what something might be worth or what a coverage value is or the contents that you're claiming. So many people did not have inventories, which is another topic we've talked about as being very important.
All right. Let's get back to inventories in a moment. But Merced Property and Casualty is in liquidation. And there are policy holders who had their insurance with this company. Will you clarify what the situation is?
Yeah, this is a small company out of Atwater, Central California. They wrote most of their business through the Central Valley. They've been in business for 112 years. It was a good little company, but their losses in this area, they had only 200 policies in all of Butte County. We don't know how many yet in Paradise, but looking at their book of business, they realized that based on the claims that were likely to come in, they would become insolvent because of the fires in Paradise. They make a call to the Guarantee Association, to the commissioner, and a team looks at the books, and the commissioner made the call, we need to file for liquidation, because getting help for these policyholders first is most important. The good news for the policyholders is that Merced was an admitted carrier, which means they're subject to all the laws and regulations in California. And the Guarantee Association, which for lack of a better way to explain it, is like the FDIC for insurance. So they're covered. Their claims will be paid by the Guarantee Association. Right now, because the Commissioner Jones took such quick action, they are moving to transfer the assets and all of the data to the Guarantee Association so they can begin immediately processing claims for the policyholders?
It seems like the place to begin could be that hotline number and simply saying, I have been a Merced policyholder.
Yeah, absolutely. And we will get them to the Guarantee Association and get them started in that claim process.
Okay, so that hotline number again is 800-927-HELP, which is 4357. I'm talking with Nancy Kincaid from the California Department of Insurance office. I said put on hold that idea of the inventory. Yeah. Let's go to that now because it's important for everybody. We're going to live in wildfire risk circumstances for a very long time. Why is a home inventory critical?
Yeah, one of the most important things that you do when you file a claim is document for the insurance company what you lost. And I guarantee you, because I've been through this with my own family, you won't remember everything you had. Even if your photos are gone, you won't remember what you owned. And typically, policyholders end up leaving money on the table because they can't remember everything, they can't claim it. They're traumatized by the fire. If you have an inventory already done, it's easy. There are free apps. The National Association of Insurance Commissioners, the Insurance Information Institute, a number of organizations offer free apps you can download on your phone. But if you don't even think to do that, I would tell you honestly, get off Facebook for just a little while. Get off your Instagram. Put down the game. Pick up your phone. It's funny that we have our phone with us all the time. And yet we haven't done this, most of us. Walk around your home, turn it on video, open every drawer and record what's in it. Open your closets, walk around your house, document the furniture, talk about it as you do it. When did you buy it? What's it made of? Where did this come from? You can probably do most of this in about an hour. And that will get you started on what you need for home inventory. When you are trying to demonstrate to the insurer the value of something, what it was worth or how old it was, nothing will speak to it like a video or a photograph. Send that video to your cloud.
Right.
It's got great storage that way, and you're one big step ahead when it comes to the claim process.
You and I have talked about this before, even with pictures of your policy or that front page that shows your policy number and the company. And again, no matter how you feel about the cloud, it is a safe and accessible storage place for information that could be lost on a laptop or a phone.
I have two cloud accounts and I have a backup hard drive and I have all of these things saved to that. And that way I have backup and fail-safe, hopefully, so I can get these things. I've emailed them to myself as well, so I have them in an email account that I can access. So back yourself up as much as you can, because when it comes down to it, you're going to need that information. It will make a world of difference when you're settling a claim.
I think the big picture is a statistic that's in some of your press releases, and that is now that nearly half of the counties in California have about 25% of their residential housing in a very high-risk wildfire zone, this urban-rural interface that is so dangerous.
Yeah.
And so that leads us to fire insurance overall, but even the matter of shopping for a home is critical.
It is. We tell people that when you're looking for a home today, you don't want sticker shock when you buy a home and you find out you either can't afford the insurance or it's unavailable, which is Commissioner Jones has had great concerns about the availability and affordability of insurance. He's been talking about it for more than a year, and he's been focused on how do we get information out to people to understand this, because it is an open market. Insurers are allowed to write insurance where they choose to and where they choose not to write. He doesn't have the authority. The legislature's never given the insurance commissioner the authority to control underwriting. So we tell people, when you shop for a home, don't just look at curb appeal, crime rate, and school quality. Add a fourth element. Before you fall in love with that home, price the insurance. Make sure it's affordable. Make sure it's available. Because it's not just in the forest where we're seeing these fires. You have to look back at the last fires we've had. Some of them are in pretty urban areas. So the danger is across the state based on climate change and what we're seeing with drought and the way and where we're building our homes.
It does lead us to wonder what the premiums will do after all of the claims, the billions of dollars worth of damage from wildfires over the last couple years. What's the projection?
We actually have heard from a number of consumers who are concerned that their rates are going to go through the roof after these big losses. The good news is Proposition 3, 103, has great protections for consumers. And one of those is something called catastrophe loading. So while insurers can recoup their losses through premium increases, they can't do it all at once. So it gets spread out over time. It's usually a minimum of 20 years. So insurers will have incremental increases in the premium, and that has to be approved by the department. It's reviewed every time a rate filing comes in. So consumers are protected. Rates have to be fair, and they have to be justified. That doesn't mean they're cheap, but it means they're fair and justified, and that's what people have to keep in mind.
I see another question that comes up on your list of top questions from citizens about insurance, and that is, why are companies allowed to cancel your coverage if you've always paid your premium and never had a fire claim?
Yeah, it goes back to that idea of an open market. Insurers may choose to write insurance where they want to. You also want to make sure when we look at a situation like Merced that is insolvent now, that you have an insurance company that manages their book of business well. You don't want them to have a big concentration of business in an area where that might make them more financially vulnerable. So they spread their risk around. The commissioner remains concerned that there are some areas where more and more insurers are leaving the area. Mm. So that's of concern. But we take it really personally when we get that non-renewal notice. Our advice to you is it's a business decision. Don't take it personally. You should be shopping for yourself as well. Find the best coverage at the best price. We have an online homeowner price comparison tool that can help you shop. Go to a broker and have a broker. That's what I did when I recently shopped. I live in a high-risk area, and I went to a broker to shop for my insurance so I could find the best coverage at the best price. And you can always call the department, that again, that toll-free number, and ask for our help. We'll help you as well.
That number is 800-927-4357. Two more quick questions. What if my car was in my garage and then my home burned or was destroyed? Is that a homeowner's insurance issue or is that an auto policy insurance issue?
Yeah, we see after these fires, you see streets that are wiped out by the fire and cars that are burned in place or in a driveway or they were in a garage. And often people mistakenly think their homeowner's insurance will cover that automobile that was or vehicle that was destroyed, the boat or RV. It's not. It's that own policy. So your private passenger auto, your boat or your RV policy will cover it. One of the things that people typically do as their car ages is they will drop comprehensive coverage to save a little money. And it is truly a little money. In the long run, dropping comprehensive may not pay off for you because if your car is damaged, not just by fire, but vandalism or some other kind of damage to it, unless you're in a collision, it's your comprehensive coverage that would typically cover you. If you don't have that coverage, those pennies that you saved by canceling that coverage, it's not worth it. Most of those vehicles, if not all of them, are probably not covered, unless the people had comprehensive coverage.
All right, last question, Nancy. What's the timetable on filing claims? And I say that understanding that people can still be walking around right now in shock, and they may have come under the umbrella of the federal disaster funds, the FEMA coverage, and haven't gotten to the point of looking at their policy yet. What's the window of time to be aware of?
You do have time to file your claim. You're protected for that period of time. It ranges, so it's important to call the department and talk to us about what your policy is and the kind of coverage you're talking about, whether it's an auto policy, a homeowner policy, and how much time you have to file that claim. But very important that you not assume that you're not covered. Call the department, check with us, and we'll make sure that we've got you the right information so that you can get your claim filed.
Anything else we need to make sure that we note in this conversation?
Do your home inventory.
Okay. Nancy, it's always a pleasure.
Thank you, Beth.
Thank you for joining us today. That is Nancy Kincaid from the California Department of Insurance. Again, that hotline number is 800-927-HELP, which is 927-4357. You can also find links to resources we've talked about, as well as the Butte County Sheriff's Office regarding anybody that is still missing and unaccounted for. It's all at capradio.org. And this is Insight on Cap Radio. Listening to Insight on Cap Radio. I'm Beth Ruyak. The topic of forest management and tree planting in California is a heightened discussion now since the intense wildfires. Add the Christmas season to that story and those permits that allow you to cut down an evergreen, and there's an interesting question floating around. Would issuing more of those permits help thin the forests and thus help prevent wildfires? So that's a question that Cap Radio environment reporter Ezra David Romero tackled this week. He's in the studio to share some of the interesting information he learned. Hi, Ezra.
Hello.
Do you have a sense of how many trees are chopped down in California during a Christmas season?
I'd say thousands and thousands. Like, for example, the Plumas National Forest cuts between 9,000 and 11,000 trees for the public. And so just depends on the forest.
We're talking about national forests when we talk about permits.
Yeah.
So talk about a permit. For some people who just make the trip to the lot, the idea of a permit isn't familiar.
Yeah, it's actually cheaper in this way. It's about $10 or $15 per permit. You go to the Forest Service office, you apply for a permit, they give it. Once you get it, you get a map. And you're told where you can and cannot go to cut down this tree. And then you have until a certain date, usually the day before Christmas, and you go cut down your tree before then. And they encourage you to go early so you don't get stuck in the snow.
So 9,000 to 11,000 trees in the example you just gave. How does that compare to the number of trees that might be identified in a similar patch of forest in terms of needing to be thinned?
It sort of pales in comparison, sort of with the intensity of the problem of overcrowding in our dense forests in California. You know, there's an example near the Truckee Forest area in the Tahoe National Forest, where Joe Flannery, who's the public information officer, who sort of tipped me off to this story, he gives a perfect quote about it. So let's hear from him.
Pretty much an at-risk wildfire zone. And there's about 50,000 trees between 0 and 4 inches diameter at breast height. So to really create a more resilient forest, one that can resist wildfire in that project, you'd have to remove 50,000 Christmas tree-sized trees. We sold 300 Christmas tree permits this year in Truckee. I just don't think it'd be feasible for 50,000 people to kind of be driving through this neighborhood to go collect trees.
And he's talking about an area near Truckee that's near the town. That's 2,000 acres. So on 2,000 acres, there's 50,000 Christmas tree-sized trees that could come off the property. But another issue when it comes to that the Plumas National Forest PIO talked to me about was that, you know, people want this, like, pretty Christmas tree with the perfect layers. Mm. And not all 50,000 of those trees are going to be beautiful. You know, a lot of them, or maybe even majority, will be the Charlie Brown trees of the forest, or just, like, ugly. You know, they don't meet our, like, Christmas standards. And so,
what do you think of this huge gap in numbers? I think you went into this story not knowing the statistics. Did it surprise you?
Not really. I think I sort of knew that the numbers were sort of small, because a lot of national forests have caps on how many trees they can sell. And that's because of the administrative personnel it takes to even give out permits, and the conditions of roads and weather conditions and things like that. So they're taking all those things into account. But on the Tahoe National Forest, they said they're going to ramp up their sales next year. They're not sure what that's going to look like. And they're also going to start They say they're going to start an online reservation system, and because that's the problem with a lot of the Forest Service places. If you live in Sacramento, you don't necessarily don't want to travel Monday through Friday to pick up a permit before 4 p.m.
Right.
And then go on the weekend with your family.
Yeah.
So they're sort of changing their minds about this slowly, it sounds like. And I also spoke with another forest, a UC system forest advisor in Tahoe, and she's a big proponent of this. She cut her own tree down with her family. Her grandson screamed timber as the tree came down, and it was this big family event. But she thinks, you know, this could be ramped up, and sort of any way we can thin the forest, we should do. And so she thinks we could do this on a larger scale.
There is that thought that any change starts with one person's action. So one more tree being cut down. Let me add another factor, though, and this is just anecdotal, but I see trees at lots advertised as being fresh cut from Oregon or freshly delivered from Washington State. What about a bigger move to make sure that more California trees are on California lots?
Yeah, Joe Flannery with the Tahoe National Forest sort of alluded to that. He says, you know, maybe we can't handle 50,000 people coming to this 2,000 acres within this three-week span, but maybe we can have some larger sales within that 2,000 acres. Maybe someone wants to come and cut down 400, 500 trees and then sell them to the Sacramento market or something like that. There's that opportunity as well. And that's already happening. I guess the Boy Scouts and other groups have different purchase agreements to cut down X amount of trees. So he thinks that could be scaled up. But on the El Dorado National Forest, they cut down 4,500 trees. And they found that, you know, they don't have the capacity to do that at the moment. They don't have the infrastructure. And there's also a lot of public land mixed with private land. And so there's differences in where you can cut.
And again, we're talking about permits on national forest land, which most of California is anyway. So then back to that original question, is it reasonable to think that a bump up in the cutting permits for Christmas trees is going to in any way be a factor in the thinning of the forests and then the prevention of wildfires?
I think it's all dependent on who you ask. When I spoke with the proponents of this idea, they say yes, because cutting down any of these trees matters. But when you look at the scale of the Sierra Nevada and all these forests and what a prescribed burn or forest thinning with these big giant machines can do versus 400 or 500 people cutting down trees with a little axe or a saw, it's a different story.
Ezra, since I have you here, one more note about another story that you've produced for us that's airing today, and that is about the PG&E lawsuits, the aging power lines, and what's rolling in terms of these lawsuits. I think we're seeing the early phase of what might come.
Yeah, late yesterday, I got an email about a class action lawsuit that a group is filing against PG&E. You know, they say that PG&E is liable. They knew that their infrastructure was aging, the power lines were old, the lines were brittle and things like that. And so they're saying they're suing for damages and losses and deaths and all these things. And so it's just one of many, many lawsuits that are happening. But there's still yet to be a cause for this. And so in some ways it's preemptive. In other ways, you know, these people have had their lives turned upside down.
I'll direct everybody to capradio.org to find both of these stories. It's always a pleasure to have you here. Thanks, Ezra.
Thanks for having me.
That is Cap Radio's environment reporter, Ezra David Romero. And there is more on our website. This is Insight at Cap Radio. You're listening to Insight on Cap Radio. I'm Beth Ruyak. Folk singer-songwriter Jessica Malone recorded a live album earlier this summer at Harlow's, and she's launching the album with a party this Saturday, December 8th, at Goldfield Trading Post in Midtown Sacramento. Jessica and I had a great conversation in June before she recorded that album, so here's a little bit of it recued.
I grew up in the foothills of a volcano. Beautiful volcano, 14,000 feet of mountain. So, yeah, that's deep in my roots, in my soul, Mount Shasta.
Tell me about the first song that you're going to play. I'd love to hear a song here live in the studio, but the backstory about it. So what are you going to play first, and where'd that song come from?
The song I'm going to play first is called Gold Flowers of the West. I love the West Coast. I really love California. And when I travel, when I go places, I always miss California. And one of the things I think about are the flowers, the poppies. California is also my favorite Joni Mitchell song.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
But I always think about the mountains and the redwoods and the flowers and the nature. California has just about everything. It's got the snowy mountains, it has the deserts, it has the ocean, and I sing about each of those things in Gold Flowers of the West.
Here she is, Jessica Malone, with Gold Flowers of the West.
Wasn't born in a big old mansion. I don't have a million things, but my voice was meant for singing, and these hands were built for strings. Oh, 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 oh. Across the desert, see the ocean, windy highway, through the fog, the coast, she cries out to me anytime I stay away too long. Oh, 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 oh. Gold flowers of the West, they call me home. From the riverbanks, the fields and the meadows, in the sun they take away my. Gold flowers of the West. Gold flowers of the West. Wanna get lost in the redwoods and find myself on a mountainside. All the while, a lonely violin keeps playing out through my mind. I've been restless, I've been weary, sleepless nights, they feel so long. I need comfort, when I get there, I'm gonna lay in California's arms. I'm gonna lay in California's arms. Gold flowers of the West, they call me home. From the riverbanks, the fields and the meadows. In the sun, they take away my breath, breath, breath. Gold flowers of the West, they call me home. From the riverbanks, the fields and the meadows. In the sun, they take. Gold flowers of the West. Oh, 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 oh.
What a beautiful song. How long did it take you to write that song?
That one was about 2 or 3 months. Sometimes songs happen really fast. That one evolved over a longer period of time. So I had the idea, and then about every week, I would think of something new and add it, and then add something new. And then I brought it into a rehearsal, and the guys had great ideas, and it evolved even more from there. About 2 or 3 months before it was finished.
Did the idea for that song start on guitar or start in your head as lyrics or a melody?
It started as a melody. I was singing in the shower. and I sang it.
That really like, happens, right?
That really does happen. That's truth. I was like, oh, I love this. And so then the next chance I got, I picked up my guitar. I was like, all right, I had to keep repeating it so I didn't lose it.
We are talking just before the live recordings of the new album. One which happens on your birthday, the other 3 days later. What's your vision or expectation?
I think it's going to go great. I think it's going to go exactly how it's supposed to. Live recordings are real. they're raw. I think that people want that. People love that. I'm excited to get this representation of the amount of energy that this band brings to the stage. When I play with my guitar, it's one way, but when the whole band is there, we're all playing at the same time, and we're all feeding off of each other, that's something magical, and I'm really excited to capture it. Some of my favorite recordings, too, I think about Ella Fitzgerald has a recording of How High the Moon, where she forgets the words, and she just starts improvising, and it's so brilliant, and it's one of my favorite recordings of all time. I think that it's not so much about perfection, and it's more about being real and just what is exactly happening and how we sound and what we do. And so that's what I'm really looking forward to, is capturing that.
There's a perspective in Gold Flowers of the West that makes me think you're looking back at home or longing for home or something. I get a sense of you having some distance. So what's that all about?
That's exactly right. I do a lot of traveling. I do a lot of touring. I've even moved away from California for a short time, and I always miss it. There's definitely a touch of that longing and that missing the comfort of California and home.
This leads us pretty directly into the next song you're going to play, which is Lonesome in Montana. Let's hear that story.
Sure. My mom moved to Montana last year, and I got to go visit her a couple of times, but our conversations on the phone started changing a little bit, and she was saying things that I'd never heard her say before. Things about lone wolves, and there's a sign. She lives in Butte, and there's a sign from Bozeman coming back into Butte that says, "Bighorn skulls beetle cleaned." And that's, and that's where the beetles will clean all the stuff off of the skulls, and they have an enzyme that polishes the skulls. It's really cool. And so she started saying these things. I'm like, these are lyrics. So I started writing this song called Lonesome in Montana, and it references all those conversations and Montana-isms.
Let's listen. Here's Jessica Malone performing for us in our studio, Lonesome in Montana.
Strong and heart soft, mountain mama mine. Got to dreaming about the big sky and the ponderosa pines. Red-eyed drive up the highway, turn a page, roll a stone. Rearview mirror, leaving behind a thousand miles of road. Somewhere out near Yellowstone, wolves are howling at the window, reminding her that she's lonesome in Montana. Yeah, she's out there on her own. Best part about her leaving, gonna be the day she comes back home. Missoula, between the Rockies and the plain, saw a sign just for Bozeman, said longhorn skulls beetle clean. Now she lonesome in Montana, somewhere out near Yellowstone. Wolves are howling at the window, reminding her. Best part about her leaving, gonna be the day she comes back home. Come back home. Come back home. Come back home.
That's Jessica Malone. Her album release party is Saturday, December 8th at Goldfield Trading Post in Midtown Sacramento. Doors open at 7:30. Thanks to Cody Drabble, Anthony Van Hook, and Andrew Nixon for recording and posting all of that beautiful music. Let's close with one more song by Jessica Malone. This is Porch Swing Sundays. You're listening to Insight on Cap Radio.
Let it change with the time.
You're listening to Insight on Cap Radio. I'm Beth Ruyak. KZAP is marking 50 years since it went on the air in Sacramento. Cap Radio music host Dennis Newhall is in the KZAP spirit. I think that happens year-round, actually. He is feeling a bit like Santa, though, and he's brought holiday shopping ideas, new box sets of great rock music with previously unreleased tracks. This is really an amazing idea for a music lover. Hi, Dennis.
I have come this morning to help you spend $1,000.
Do you have a Brinks truck with you, actually, because these are really precious gifts in front of me. We're going to start with the Beatles, and this is an interesting bit of trivia. When KZAP went on the air, the White Album hadn't come out yet.
It was about 2 weeks away. And so it just celebrated 50 years, as has KZAP. And there are several 50th anniversary special issues this year, probably the top one being the White Album, because it's full of stuff most people haven't heard. Besides Giles Martin's remixing of the album, it includes the Escher demos, which is when they all gathered at George's house in May and they played in his brand new reel-to-reel tape deck. Now, that's been bootlegged, but this is first generation. It's got the deluxe set has three CDs of outtakes, workup takes, early versions of songs that you're familiar with for the most part. And then there's a Blu-ray in there that has the 5.1 mix, the mono mix, which is markedly different in many places, and a giant book. It's a beautiful set.
The book is white with nothing on it except down in the lower right corner, number.
Some number, yeah.
Yeah, some serial number, right.
And embossed, the Beatles on there, just like the original album.
Yeah, amazing.
Beth is thumbing through it here.
I know. I think I'll just duck out and let you take the rest of the show.
Are your hands clean?
I know. Right. You do have to wash your hands with that. Can we listen to a little music?
Yeah, this is one of my favorites because it's so different and everybody's familiar with it. From the White Album, this is Helter Skelter.
What a different version.
Yeah, that was take two, and they went through several takes before the one we're familiar with. And I have not heard the whole set yet, but I hear there's another version on here that I think is 12 minutes long.
So is that on one of the outtakes CDs?
This is on one of the outtakes CDs.
Huh. You are a Beatles fan anyway. Did you find a lot to kind of sink into and explore?
Well, as I said, I haven't had a chance to absorb it all yet. Some of it I'm familiar with from bootlegs over the years, and some of these tracks have been released before, but there's just so much in here. I want to make sure that I'm not being bothered when I listen to this one.
Okay, what's the price range on this?
It's interesting because it goes up and down, and yeah. Amazon keeps it at about $125 right now, but that's about what this one costs.
All right, I'm talking with Dennis Newhall, holiday gift ideas for the rock fans in your life. There's another beautiful set with Jimi Hendrix, the Electric Ladyland.
50 years of Electric Ladyland. This came out just before KZAP went on the air, and they have remastered the album. There's an album full of demos and outtakes, which I have to say is pretty much for collectors only. Then there's a Hollywood Bowl show on there that I don't think has ever seen an official release, and a restored 90s documentary about the making of Electric Ladyland. But the book is one of the keys on this because it's not that expensive of a set. And it's got the Linda Eastman photo that they almost used as a cover. It's got some outtakes from the British cover and a lot of information in it. But it is a nice set. And it also has a Blu-ray in it with a 5.1 mix. So for the collector and the casual fan, this could be worthwhile. Now, it's only $50 unless you want to buy vinyl, which I'm over vinyl.
You are?
Vinyl is twice as much. $100 for the vinyl.
Okay. You're done with vinyl?
I'm done with vinyl.
Are you long done with cassette tapes?
Yeah. I never owned a cassette player.
You didn't?
No, I did not.
Wow.
Sorry.
Really a purist. One thing about both the White Album collection and the Jimi Hendrix is the copies of the handwritten notes.
Oh, right.
To see the handwriting.
Writing up the songs, yeah.
To see the scratching out, the retakes, the paper that it was written on, the hotel paper. Let's listen to some music. There's no appropriate place to get out of that guitar work.
That's obviously Rainy Day Dream Away before it became what we're all familiar with.
Yeah.
Slowed down quite a bit.
Yeah. It is fun to hear these outtakes and releases that we never heard. And I think, wow, if those were just released on their own.
They'd be okay. Yeah,
they'd be great. We're moving on. Tom Petty has a collection, An American Treasure. And this one is not a big book. This doesn't look like a big full album set. However, there are options.
It does come in a big format with a bigger book and a vinyl record, but at that one is $150. For about $25, you get four discs of mostly live and unreleased tracks, and this was curated by Mike Campbell, the guitar player, and by Tom's daughter and wife. They picked out what they thought was, besides unreleased tracks, there are live versions of some familiar things and a few tracks taken directly from albums. So out of four CDs, it's maybe 2.5 CDs worth of stuff you haven't heard before.
It's a book that's a little bigger than the size of a CD case, and the CDs are slipped right into the pages.
Right.
Just to touch it is a really cool experience,
and
too.
This version is, it's more modest, but it's got all the music on it. I think it's certainly worth $25. I'm not sure about the big set, but if you're a huge Tom Petty fan, you'll want to get that, too. I should mention, before we go into any more music, there's other ones, too, we're not going to play music from, but you kind of decide, well, is this a good deal? Is this worth it? The Eagles have a box set out called Legacy, which includes everything they ever did with no bonus tracks. As far as I can tell, it hasn't been remastered. The only thing different about it is there's a rare B-side, the Christmas single, and a song they put out after 9/11, one song, and then there's some live concert footage, but it's $150. If you don't have a good solid Eagles collection, you might want to get Legacy. Other than that, I don't really, there's nothing new about it. They've been very stingy with any session outtakes.
Okay.
We also have a 50th anniversary of the first Jethro Tull album, but they put out a 40th anniversary version, and with some other releases, most collectors already have all this stuff. It's a nice set, but it's a little crazy. The Kinks' Village Green Preservation Society, which was a terrific album, that's come out again with one song you've never heard and a whole bunch of records in 45s and vinyl and all that. So if you want to spend $150 just for stuff but not get any new music, you could do that. And one more that I want to mention, REM, eight CDs of BBC performances plus a DVD. So they're all well recorded. This is career spanning. Easily the best bet. This is the biggest bang for your buck. In fact, speaking of buck, today is guitarist Peter Buck's birthday from REM. Just $60 for nine discs of REM live performances. So I think that's probably the best deal out there, but it's not a big fancy book. Beth's holding it in her hand now. It's just a nice box with a big thick booklet in it, but lots and lots and lots of music.
Yeah, you'd unwrap this and flip it over and look at what is listed on these discs and then realize what gift you got.
Right, there's a lot on there.
What's the price on this one?
That's only $60.
Okay.
But it's not as easy to find, but you can find it online.
All right, we are going to finish up with Bob Dylan, and we might as well just roll underneath us a little bit of Tangled Up in Blue and talk about this box set.
Bob Dylan had kind of a down period, and then Blood on the Tracks came out, which was one of his many comebacks, 1975. He had recorded it in New York, mostly acoustic, but then he decided to re-record some in Minneapolis. When the record came out, the liner notes were about the original version of the album, and Bob had changed some of the music, so people were kind of confused. Then they put the album out again with different liner notes, then they went back to the original. So it's always been kind of a chaotic album. This is all of the New York takes, all of the Minneapolis takes, which means you can sit there and go through six takes of a song and hear it develop.
All right, here is take one of Tangled Up in Blue.
Tangled Up in Blue. Was mad when they first met. Soon to be divorced.
So, you know, in a way, this is for collectors only because you're hearing the song develop.
Yeah.
The nice silver lining for a more casual Bob Dylan fan is there is a one CD set of all what they thought were the best outtakes of the album.
All right, Dennis, a lot of great ideas there. People can hear you Saturday nights, KZAP on CAP Radio, Saturdays at 7.
I'll be here.
Happy holidays.
Thank you, you
Hope
too.
There's a lot of music in your stocking. That is Dennis Newhall, and that's also Insight for today. I'm Beth Ruyak. Thanks for joining us.